monthly podcast to update you on the volcanic activity of the weeks. I'm one of your hosts, Alessandro Musu.
And I'm Ira, the host, Corinne Jorgensen. We're PhD students at the University of Geneva.
We study volcanoes and are here to give you all the hot volcano news.
First, the focus of the month, and then the volcano news.
Let's get to it.
Okay. Alrighty. So we got a new eruption from Fagradalsfjall this month. Some of you might remember this was a really exciting eruption back in 2021, and there was also some short-lived activity last year in August.
For this eruption, inflation this time started around April, reaching a total of 3 cm of inflation. Some data suggest that there was accumulation of magma at 15 km of depth, and in June there were many, many earthquakes.
The seismicity intensified the first week in July with an earthquake swarm on July 4th with over 16,000 earthquakes. The earthquake locations were steadily getting shallower and shallower, and by July 5th, somewhere as shallow as 2 to 3 kilometers. In this context, when earthquakes tend to get shallower, we can start to think of this as there being movement in the crust, which is likely to be from volcanic activity. This might be cracks kind of propagating in front of a magma front. On July 5th, the aviation color code was raised to orange because they thought an eruption was imminent. And the eruptions and the earthquakes continued and were starting to be concentrated on the northeast southwest flank between Fagradalsfjall and the Kjeller cone, so the north northeast of where the 2021 and 2022 eruptions took place. Most of the earthquakes were just north of a small hill called Litli Hutr Hill, and some of you may have seen on Twitter or on other coverages, some people are using that name to talk about the eruption.
On July 10th, there was a tremor which has detected and intensifying, and this ended in a fissure opening at 4:40 p.m. local time with incandescent but no ash. From this, a lava flow was reported, which quickly got to 900 meters long. Some lava fountaining was also seen along the fissure. Following this initial phase, the tremor decreased and activity seems to wane over the next few days.
Okay, so over the following week, the lava flow continued to go and to flow, and eventually it met up with part of the lava field from the 2021 eruption. The flow had an average flow rate of around 300 to 400 meters per day, and there was a main vent that started to build up, and there was some really awesome footage of lava spilling out of the vent. There's this, an especially good one from July 19th, where there's a break in the northwest section of the vent, and then there's this big lava outpouring. It's very cool. I recommend you go find it on YouTube.
The following 2 weeks, the eruption continues with just steadily outpouring of lava, but starting to slow down. Generally, it seems like the eruption is now over, but the IMO officially states that it's too early to state if the eruption is actually over, but states that a new phase of the eruptive activity has begun.
Okay, so you might have noticed it seems a little bit cyclic, the behaviors. We get one eruption every summer for the past year, 3 summers. Okay, and there's been some postulating and some ideas being thrown around in the, like, volcano academic Twitter community. Very niche, I know, but it's cool. About this, which I will share because I think it's cool, but I would just want to give a big caveat that this is all kind of some speculative stuff at this point. And of course, you can find these people on Twitter. Okay, so before we start with that, just a little bit of background provided by Jacqueline Licari at Gretch Licari on Twitter. The eruptive history of the Rykianos Peninsula has been happening for quite some time, but there's been like 800 years of quiet. And then typically, then after this 800 years, there was 300 to 400-ish years of volcanic unrest and activity. Generally, in this like 300, 400-year period, it's also sometimes deemed fires. It's like Rykianos fires, even though it's a volcano, it's not fires. But usually this kind of activity focuses on a single system for a few decades before migrating to a different system. She also notes that the activity starts relatively east and generally propagates westerly. So it's feasible that if we're starting one of these new cycles, that we're going to see a lot more activity in the next few hundreds of years. Okay. Dr. Ed Marshall, which is at Tetrahedra on Twitter, posted on August 6th, some interesting trends between the 2022 and 2023 eruptions, finding some similarities with the patterns of length, volumes erupted. So the final count of volume erupted was 16 million cubic meters, where in 2022 it was 11 million cubic meters. He also found that the geochemistry of the eruptive products was quite similar, and the tremor patterns have kind of been pretty similar as well as the pattern has waned. So both Dr. Robin Andrews, aka at Squiggly Volcano on Twitter, and Ed have both noted that there's been about a 320-day rhythm between the last few years. So maybe, potentially, this will happen again. And Alessandro, you and I should just plan a vacation in Iceland next June.
But, well, we can actually, but maybe we can wait the eruption start to go. Because, you know, the first day when the eruption activity starts is quite dangerous. Because as it happens this year, the very early phase is with a lot of gas release, and you don't know if different fissure is gonna open. And so maybe...
But you want to be on the island already, so that you, like, are there. Just in case, what if there's a big ash plume and then you can't get there because they stop flying? You gotta be there. Maybe we should even go in May.
We can go in May, but then just go visit the eruption after 5 days from the beginning. No, you want to go there and take all the gas.
We can do it safely, which actually segues into the next line that you're supposed to read.
So, the IMO notes that are still many hazards around the eruption site, including lava degassing, high temperature of lava field, and instability of the lava field in some places. So, if you are going to visit, please be careful and follow the rules of the local authorities.
Okay, so that's it for the focus. Thanks to our sources, the Icelandic Meteorological Office website, or the IMO, the Smithsonian Global Volcanism Program, and of course the mentioned Twitter users for their fresh data and hot takes. Cool. Now for the news.
So we just discussed some news from Iceland, and remaining in Europe, we have some new activity from one of our favorite volcanoes.
And of course we're talking about Mama Etna in Italy, our European queen. On July 14th, there was some Strombolian activity happening at the southeast crater. And about 1 month after, on August 13th, the Strombolian activity kind of came back and started to increase, making these big, spectacular lava fountains that we know and love from Mama Etna, with lava jets going as high as hundreds of meters in the air. This activity was also accompanied by lava flows down the south flank of the southeast crater. Activity ceased in the wee hours of the morning on August 14th, but there was also an ash plume that morning with 4.3 kilometers. And of course, this caused some issues at the airport of Catania.
Okay, Piton de la Fournée, La Réunion, we have updates on the activity starting on July 2nd that now has ceased. So the eruption began on July 2nd from multiple vents contemporary active, but already on July 3rd, the activity vent reduced to one, which started to grow a small cone made up of ejected material. The cone reached 30 meters in height in about 1 month, and the eruption also develops a lava flow, which traverses 2.5 kilometers away from the cone. The lava flow then stopped just 2 kilometers away from a road, and at that point the flow didn't advance in length, but started to gain width and thickness. On August 10th, after a decreased trend in seismic activity, the eruption ceased.
Alright, so we can chat a little bit about what's been happening in Asia the last month and a half. So in Papua New Guinea, there was eruptions from Bagan, Langali, and Ulaun. At Bangan, there was a lot of activity with a particularly large eruption on July 15th that had a plume which rose up to 16.5 kilometers above sea level, which is pretty high. This eruption also had several pyroclastic flows and ash falls, of course, which also sadly has contaminated some of the local drinking water, as well as damaged crops, and has actually collapsed some buildings as well, very unfortunately. Following this eruption, over 7,000 people have been evacuated, and the eruption has continued, but thankfully the activity is starting to be waning. and has been reduced to more smaller plumes and lava flows.
Also in Papua New Guinea, there were some small eruptions from Langila. There were also unrest and minor emission from Ulawun. With the alert level began rise from 1 to 2 in a 4-level scale on July 27th, with following an increase of volcanic tremor. The last few weeks there was a decrease in activity, so the alert level was lower again to 1.
At Japan, we saw some unrest from Kyushu-Miyama and Kuchinoera-Bujima, who both had shallow volcanic earthquakes. There was also eruptions from Kikai, Suwanosojima, and Arbia volcano.
Indonesia had a lot of activity the past month and a half. Eruption as usual with some small below 2 km plumes from Dukono, Ibo, Lewotolok, Olokon Empung, Dempo, Semeru, and Krakatau. More notably, Karangetan, Sangile Highland in Indonesia, also had some lava avalanches and lava flows on the south-southwest drainages, reaching up to 2 km from the crater the first week of August. These lava flows have sometimes been accompanied by grey clouds. Over 104 people have been evacuated from the surrounding villages within 2.5 km radius from the vent. The alert level is now at 3 over 4, and there is an exclusion zone varying from 2.5 to 3.5 km depending on the sector. As usual, the south-southwest sector is the worst one.
Lastly, in Indonesia at Merapi, there was lots of continued activity. Throughout the month, there were several avalanches from the collapsing dome. Actually, there were 254 avalanches just in the last week of July, which is a lot. The observatory reports that the dome volume is estimated to be around 2.5 million cubic meters, and the alert level is currently 3 out of 4, and there's a 3 to 7 kilometer exclusion zone.
In the Philippines, at Mayon, there was a lot of activity. Lava has been steadily flowing and feeding lava flows on the south and southeast flank of the volcanoes. There have also been several pyroclastic density currents and avalanches, which travel up to 4 km from the crater. These activities have been accompanied by an increase in SO2 emission, and over 20,000 people were evacuated to shelters or an alternative housing location. This intense activity has continued throughout the month. The daily averages were 66 up to 225 rock falls, 1 to 9 pyroclastic density current per day, and 44 up to 272 low-frequency volcano earthquakes. The alert level is 3 on a scale of 4, and the exclusion zone is about 6 km from the crater.
All right, so in the Americas, we can chat about what's happening in Alaska. There's been some new eruptions starting at Shishaldin Volcano, which is on Fox Island in Alaska. So everything kind of started on July 10th, where we saw an increase in seismicity, mainly in tremors and low-frequency earthquakes. Then there started to be some incandescence seen at the summit. A first explosion occurred on July 14th, producing an eruptive plume 12 kilometers above sea level. There was also interaction of hot pyroclastic deposits and snow, which produced a small lahar. Later that day, the tremor amplitude began to increase, followed by multiple explosions, and the aviation color code was raised to red. This accumulated in another really strong explosion on July 18th, after which the activity decreased and the aviation color code got lowered back to orange. Over the month, the volcano has been oscillating several times between this intense activity and low activity, making the aviation color code go up and down and up and down between red and orange several times, and generating several tall ash plumes, and the most violent one going up to 11 kilometers above sea level. The last paroxysm occurred on August 4th, but now on August 15th, just as we're recording this, the tremors seem to be going up again, so there's possibility for another paroxysm to occur while I edit this episode later today or tomorrow.
Peru is at the center of the attention for the amazing paleontological discovery of a huge Basilosaurus whale from the Middle Eocene, named Peruchetus colossus, an animal that has the potential to be one of the heavier ever exist, if not the heaviest. But it is not the only thing currently shaking Peruvian scientists. Peru was pretty active, and not only our beloved Sabancaia showing sign of activity, but also Ubinas, with intense seismicity and at least 7 major explosions confirmed in the first week of July. And this continued throughout the month and into August, with ash plume up to 7.9 km. The alert level at Ubinas is orange now, in a scale of 4 colors.
Also in the Americas, at a fuego in Guatemala, there was the ongoing eruption, which actually triggered some avalanches late in July. On July 31st and August 1st, there were some jet engine sounds heard in the nearby towns, and actually shockwaves vibrated some of the roofs of these villages as well. We also saw some lahars, which were very strong and carried some large tree trunks down the flanks of the volcano.
At Kilauea, Hawaii, a new earthquake swarm has just started on August 13 and found mostly in regions with high ground deformation, and most are beneath Kalaupele, which is the Kilauea caldera. This is likely related to magma accumulation and migration under the summit, which may lead to an eruption in the future.
All right, so for the rest of the Americas, there was a lot of activity, but it was all pretty the usual activity. We saw stuff from Popocatépetl in Mexico, Sabancaia, as mentioned, who also had a 8.5 kilometer plume. Villa Rica in Chile, Rincón de la Vieja, Nevada del Ruiz in Colombia, SOAS in Costa Rica, Santa Maria in Guatemala, Reventador in Ecuador, and Great Sitkin in Alaska.
In Russia, we saw activity from the usual suspects, with some eruption with plume up to 4.5 kilometers from Ibeko, minor stromboli activity and lava flow from Klyuchesko, as well as fumaroles and small ash plumes from Shilovich.
Anyways, that's it for the news for this month and also last month. Sorry for being late. Thanks to our sources, VolcanoDiscovery.com, the Smithsonian Global Volcanism Program, as well as, of course, all the observatories who are the ones collecting this sick, cool data. Lastly, Alessandro and I have decided we're going to take a long pause from the podcast due to the fact that we're both stressed. PhDs are hard, guys. So we'll be back at some point in time.
Yeah.
But no promises as to when. Anyways.
And thank to you all, guys, for listening. See you eventually next time.
Or if something really cool happens and we want to add it to the podcast.
Yeah.
No promises.
I don't know. New lava fountain from Montana. Peru is at the center of the attention for the amazing paleontological discovery of a huge
Like, it's